This is the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet, and why. I'm Chris Bilmay with Thousand Eyes Technical Marketing. I'm joined here by Kamal, Principal Engineer at Thousand Eyes. Welcome.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for the invite. Good to be back on the Internet Report.
Good to be here with you. So today we're going to unpack the recent AWS outages, starting with the major December 7th incident. And we'll walk through what Thousand Eyes saw and what we learned. So let's start with this one. So this is actually the first event that we detected on the 7th. Now we can see here, beginning at a, you know, just after, actually right around 1535 UTC, what we're actually seeing here is HTTP server failure. So running some tests against EC2 within the US East 1 Amazon region, and we're starting to observe some evidence of the problem. So for example here, we're looking good at this time point. And then immediately, we start to see some red appear with these agents here. And if we click over on our table view to get a little more detailed information, we can see specifically what's happening. So from various locations, we're querying the EC2 API in US East 1, and we're starting to get these receive failures, these timeouts. Basically, we tried for a certain amount of time and we give up. And furthermore, we're also seeing, and this is, you know, prevalent throughout this event, we're seeing 503 errors being handed back to us from presumably one of their proxy services on behalf of that service being unavailable.
That's correct. And looking at the event, we can see that it lasted for a quite extensive period of time. And as indicated by the purple color, we see that Thousand Eyes marked this as an AWS outage quite clearly. One of the things that I wanted to reflect on this graph when it comes to availability is this limited scope. So as part of which we can see that, you know, availability was 100%, the line was pretty flat, and then it slightly dips. And looking down on the table, we can see that just portion of the agents were affected.
Yeah, and that's what was interesting about this one, Kamal. It was never 100% unavailable, right? Various sources would work and then stop working. So let's just walk through this. For example, we see here, New York, Paris, Amsterdam, and Cape Town are failing. These remaining ones are getting healthy 200 okay responses, right? But as we kind of walk through this event. Now we've got Charlotte, North Carolina, seeing a failure, and Moscow here, and whereas other ones are successful. So, for example, you know, Paris here, we saw it failing a few minutes ago, and here we are getting a 200 okay. So it's definitely intermittent kind of failure behavior that we observe with this.
And what's really interesting is actually the amount of services that reported the issue. Like the scale of this event online was quite large, which just speaks about the scale of the AWS itself, right? If you think about it, we are seeing like dips that are maybe 40% dips out of 100% at the most, yet reports online of services being down were quite extensive. And as I said, that just speaks about the scale of Amazon and AWS.
Yeah, and one thing to note, so this was actually a test against their Amazon's EC2 service, right? So this is a very foundational service within AWS. So in other words, there's a lot of service dependencies within all these components that make up the totality of the solution you'll use. And it's a beautiful thing when it's all working together. To get you that get that solution working, it's a lot of pieces talking to a lot of pieces, but at the core are going to be services like EC2.
Yes, and based on what we observed so far when it comes to this event, there was no packet loss on the front doors when it comes to this event, correct?
That's correct. So let's go ahead and take a quick look at this. So, you know, as we know, there can be a few ways that a solution like this can fail for a customer. So you can have something, say, control plane related. In other words, something in routing, something BGP on the internet, perhaps, or, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know how to get to that destination, and it's going to fail in that manner. Another way, of course, we know that it can fail, and this is what we're tracking at and looking at here, are those key IP characteristics. So, you know, as we, you know, you may know, there's really only a few ways an IP packet delivery can ultimately fail. You can drop those packets, so they're consumed somewhere between source and destination, never reach their destination. You can, and that's what we're looking at here with this metric. And I'll cover this briefly here in a second. But the other thing we can track, of course, is that latency. So I'm receiving that data, but it's taking a really long time for it to get to me. And, you know, especially in things like TCP protocol, it can result in kind of a, you know, an expanding problem the more loss you have. In other words, it's going to keep slowing down more and more, you know, with kind of nature of TCP behavior. If things take a long time and you end up, you know, with various backoff mechanisms and so forth.
What we observed is the dip in the HTTP server availability, but at the same time, we don't see anything on the path which would indicate deeper network-related problems, such as packet loss or significant latency spike. What we are seeing here across all of the agents that are executing this test, we are seeing aggregate values, and pretty much on the peak of the event, we see that there was no loss, or at very brief moments in time, there was like up to 1% packet loss, which can be safely be discarded given the fact that it not persisted. Also, when it comes to latency, as you shown earlier, there was nothing that would indicate deeper problem from that perspective, which points towards something that's relevant to service, which we also saw in the HTTP server table, as part of which we were seeing those 503s, which are quite indicative of the server-related issues.
Yeah, exactly. I'll go back over to that briefly here. So, well, here we have nothing but timeouts, but again, there's a little bit of intermittent behavior. Sometimes we just take too long and we time out, and then other times we actually did receive various 503s. And just one note, so the significant part about a 503 or any of the 500, HTTP 500 responses, what that indicates to us is that our packets actually got all the way ultimately to the web service, or at least a proxy that's handling proxy services for that web service, and has returned an error to us, right? So it's not a matter of, you know, we already looked and saw there's no loss, there's no latency, there's no jitter, there's nothing actually disrupting IP path between these tests and Amazon. But furthermore, this 500 shows that, hey, my stuff got there. And in fact, it got to some node within Amazon, And Amazon said, hey, like I know on the back end the service is not available. I'm going to respond and let you know with a 500. So the fact that we get this mix of timeouts and HTTP 500 responses is telling us quite clearly that we're actually getting to Amazon's environment. And hence this appears to be something on the internal side that's not available and responding in this fashion.
Exactly correct. And if you look at the timeout values, you can see that, you know, those are almost 10 or 6 seconds, which is more than ample time to actually execute tests such as this one, which usually takes milliseconds rather than seconds, right?
Right. Like if we jump back over here, for example, when everything's happy, you know, occasionally we see a spike. Of course, these are coming quite a distance, right? They're coming across the Atlantic Ocean or at least across the ocean and so forth, quite a distance. So, but even then, it's never getting much more than a second, you know, second and a half.
Exactly, and that's we saw it. I think that across different regions, when we average the data, it's what 120 milliseconds. Which yes. All of this to say that actually Amazon did publish RCA on this event, which indicates that there were certain problem. So, Chris, would you like to take us through the event?
Yeah. So this is a very nice write up that Amazon put out. They came out with this on the 10th, to kind of summarize what you know, what they learned and what they saw and ultimately what happened on the 7th. But something that we found very interesting here, so they note that this is ultimately some type of an internal network event. But one of the things they call out here, I'll just read it. These networking devices provide additional routing and network address translation that allows AWS services to communicate between the internal network and the main AWS network. So this is ultimately what was being impacted. So I think there's some significance there. And we should probably talk a little bit about, you know, why you know, Amazon uses this type of a NAT and routing device, but between these environments.
So over the last couple of years, Amazon came forward and actually revealed a lot of interesting details about their infrastructure, as part of which they spoke about the importance of, designing specific hardware that's actually fit for their needs. As you can imagine, all of the big scale companies or large scale companies are following the same path. So Google is not exemption. Facebook is not exemption. So Amazon is following the same path. So as you can imagine, that they are operating quite large scale network. And within that network, you have this concepts of regions. Within the regions, you have the concept of availability zones. But once you translate that to, physical topology, you can translate that to having actually every availability zone being data center or multiple of data centers. So obviously, IP address space, regardless whether it's a private or public, and regardless of the size of the company that you are opening, becomes scarce, right? So they needed to do something such as NAT. And, you know, what I found really interesting in this write-up is actually that they quite openly called this these networks like as a NAT devices, which I find quite interesting. And looking into our pod visualization, what we also see that these events did happen within the AWS network, right? So if you look at the pod visualization, you will see on the left-hand side, somewhere in the middle of the pod, that, you know, these packets are going towards the AWS, they enter the AWS backbone network, and it looks like they are being, you know, held, or they are timing out in the middle of that pod, which is potentially some kind of border between their border network and their data center network. So that's how I read the data based on what was exposed in that RCA and what we were able to see in our pod visualizations.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And just to, pick on this one, because it's at the top here, we can even see where that handoff occurs, right? So here's a Tata Communications, and then hands off to Amazon-controlled infrastructure at this point. And so we know that, our IP path was clean, all the way to Amazon's edge, as we looked at with the lack of latency loss and jitter. So in other words, nothing impacting a core IP functionality from here to there. But at some point, once it enters Amazon's environment, then that's when we start experiencing the timeouts, the behavior.
So based on the RCA, it looks like these devices that are handling are NAT devices, and based on particular AWS reInvent event from 2018, it looks like a Blackfoot Edge device. And they are saying that they got overloaded with a lot of traffic, as part of which we saw what we saw. Now, Thousand Eyes observed this impact across different services. So first, we observed it on EC2. And then we noticed that 15 minutes after this event, this particular event started, potentially as a result of that event unfolding at scale, we noticed that S3 got impacted. Could you tell us a little bit more about the timeline and how that looked like?
Right. Yeah. So we saw, and this is and this matches up with their RCA as well, because they Amazon even notes here. I'll just jump back over here, but Amazon even notes that one of the earliest impacts was to parts of EC2 control plane, right? So this is basically what enables a customer to, you know, spin up a new EC2 instance and these sorts of activities. So that impact we saw starting at about 35 minutes after the hour, so 1535 EC2 UTC rather, and then interestingly, it's about 10 minutes, 15 minutes past that event. Now we see an impact to our S3 API test. So if I jump back here to, you know, at the point where we saw EC2 impact, we're still fine here. So we're talking to S3 API. This is their storage, ultimately their storage service API, and we're getting 200s, right? So we actually start seeing the problem about here, and again, we see timeouts and 503s.
So based on the pattern, it looks like this event started significantly later compared to the first event, which potentially indicates that whatever happened with EC2 started unfolding in a way where it started kind of gradually impacting other services. Now, we need to take into consideration the fact that even with EC2, we did not see 100% availability drop, but it looks like this was a kind of like spillover effect of, you know, these devices getting potentially overutilized by something as part of the scaling activities that it was written in RCA, as a result of which it had gradual impact to S3, which kind of we see had impact on overall availability of the service.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we can see here with S3, again, it was, you know, it has the appearance of kind of a residual impact as opposed to maybe, you know, the core thing that went wrong, right? And it's definitely less of an impact. We saw a much wider range of failures from various sources to EC2 than we do with S3. So here again, we've got a few sites failing here, London, Chicago, Amsterdam. But by and large, it's one or two failures and then a lot of success. So the ones that are failing, however, they're the same type of condition, either a timeout or proxy handing us that information that, hey, my service isn't available. Here's a 503.
Is the timeline of this event? Does it aligns up with the resolution of the EC2 event?
It does. So this one, really, I mean, the core of it was in this time frame here to about the, you know, say 1620. We do see a little bit. I mean, I would say full resolution's not till here, though. So right about 1705 UTC, we finally see full resolution.
And that is the timeline. That perfectly matches the timeline with the EC2 event, right?
It does. So I'll jump back over here. So again, this one started at 1535 or so. And then we're in the all clear from our testing perspective by 1720. So 1535 to 1720 for EC2. And for S3, more or less, right?
But the impact on S3 was smaller anyways. And then by far the most interesting aspect of this event potentially happened, obviously after the Amazon explained what happened in their RCA, from the perspective of API gateways, right? Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Right. So, and let's actually talk briefly about the API gateway. So, within AWS, within Amazon Web Services, again, we have these core functional pieces that get stitched together via APIs to provide a seamless service. So, we talked about the EC2 service. We looked briefly at the storage service availability, the S3 service. Now, their API gateway is really that is the interface for, you know, all of Amazon's customers and partners to interface and interact on, you know, the cloud, really. So this is kind of your way into that cloud to you know, leverage all of their services. So this is, think of it as kind of a front end to all of those back-end APIs that you're going to then stitch together into this seamless service. So
what's really interesting about that is that we can see quite clear spike in overall transaction time towards one of the services that's utilizing API gateways, right? And the most interesting aspect of this particular spike in the transaction time is the fact that it started approximately at the time where EC2 and S3 events were over.
Yeah, that's actually what's, I think is very cool. I mean, well, not cool for the event, but cool in this type of visibility, because we can see that quite clearly the core of the problem began, what, about 90 minutes or so prior to what we're seeing on this timestamp here. The core of the issue appeared to hit their EC2 service, and they even note that, hey, we had an issue with this part of the network that would have impacted EC2 control plane. Shortly after that, we start to see the S3 failures. At the conclusion, from our testing perspective of those API failures, you know, we now have 100% success for EC2 API. We have 100% success for S3 API. And now we start to see failures against the API gateway. So what this test, this is a, you know, what we refer to as a transaction test. So it's a, you know, get a little more detailed. It's a very powerful test to be able to run against something like Amazon's API gateway. And we start seeing these transaction failures here, and they're even broken down into kind of different phases, average transaction, the authentication phase of it, and so forth. But we start seeing this start at the conclusion of EC2. So it's kind of like, hey, we had an issue with this part of the network. It's impacting EC2 control plane. It's resulting in some other kind of maybe residual impacts with like 8S3. We resolve it. And now, seemingly oddly, right, API gateway starts to fail. But you know, I actually don't think that's odd behavior. I would argue that this is probably, you know, given what we know, this would line up and this would make sense.
Yeah, like timeline perfectly matches the timeline of the previous two events that we showcased that had the negative effect. So this, based just on perfectly matching timeline, looks like the after the effect previous events as part of which different workflows that were potentially retrying quite a lot, you know, all spiked at the same time. And what we are seeing is actually, you know, increased transaction time that resulted as a result of, you know, services not working operationally and 100% in the period of time before that. So, Amazon actually gave us quite detailed RCA, which essentially gives and sheds more light onto this event. But there were other AWS-related events that happened a few days after this one. So the first event that we just spoke about happened on 7th of December. And the second event actually happened on 10th of December. What was that all about?
Yeah, let's jump on over to that one. Just one more point to mention. What I would say is that Of the impacts we observed, the longest in terms of duration by quite a large margin was actually the API gateway. Even though this seems to me not probably, you know, what the core of the issue was, right? This was something that happened after that core impact, but yet it took quite a long time to recover.
Which potentially speaks to the scale of Amazon, right? This is obviously assumption, right? But like, if you look at this lengthy event that happened after the main event was resolved, this is just like a potential indicator on how big they are and how many retries actually did happen during the time the core services were down, right? Or impaired, so to say. Okay, let's switch to the event on 10. What happened here, Chris?
Yeah, so this was an interesting one. It's a little different, than what we saw on the 7th, but still impacting the same area. So again, this is an event we caught on the 7th. It began 1305 UTC on the 10th, and immediately what we see here, I'll go over to the map view. Again, we start seeing failures from various regions around the world communicating to the EC2 API in US East 1. Again, the same site for which we had the issue on the 7th. Now, here it starts at this time frame. You can see I'll click over to the table view. And what's interesting about this one it's the lion's share of the errors were actual 503s. So it wasn't just a matter of us timing out for the vast majority of them. So what we saw in the seventh, a lot of the errors were just timeouts. We gave up with the occasional 500 response, right? Whereas with this event on the 10th, we get a lot of 500s. So we see kind of a little bit of a start that lasts about, let's see here. So this is about 20 minutes. Where we've got some impact, then it fully recovers, and then here we go to 100% impact. So I'll just jump over to here, and we're just 100% of these sources are failing. So if you look over our map view, the whole world's red, right?
And what's really interesting here is that we quite clearly see that all of these were 500 internal server errors from all around the globe. The pattern of the event is pretty much identical to the first event that we saw happening on the 7th. However, it looks like AWS status page was not updated, and this event kind of like got pretty unnoticed by wider community, so to say. But reassemblance to the event that happened on 7th December event is quite stunning, given the fact that also on this event we did not see any kind of packet loss, networking paths were quite clear, and this was purely like server related issue.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll just jump here in the middle of you know, if we look over here at HTTP server, 100% of our agent tests are failing at this moment. But if I go over here to overview, look at these key characteristics. There's a zero loss. Latency is flatlined across the, you know, before and after the event. Jitter is a non-issue, right? So there's, again, no IP characteristics influencing this. When we looked at BGP route visualization, we don't see an impact to BGP. We don't see it didn't appear to have any kind of a control plane. Cause, at least from perspective,
which indicates service related issues essentially.
Right? Yeah, absolutely, and just the fact that they're 500s.
Exactly, exactly, and yeah. Given the fact that we don't have any kind of RCA for this event, and given the fact that it closely reassembled the event that happened on 7th. Speculation might be that actually this is some kind of corrective action for the event that previously happened or something down those lines. But quite interestingly, what I found quite stunning about this event, it's like low coverage about it. Like there was not a lot of press about it. Waters will come, so to say, when it comes to this particular one.
Well, here's one difference. Maybe that might explain. So with the event on the 7th, the vast majority of that outage was the what seems like it might be residual impact to that API gateway service. That's a very in your face outage, right? Customers are going to know if I can't successfully reach API gateway. During this event, our transaction test actually looked healthy and green during this entire time frame. So we were able to communicate to the API gateway within the Amazon and get a response in a timely fashion. Now, where we see the failure again was this EC2 service, the API. Now, what that would mean though, is if you're using EC2, it probably was working fine for you. Now, if you had to spin up a new EC2 instance during this window right here, then that's when you would have caught the problem, right? So it would have been, hey, just during this hour time frame, I'm trying to spin up a new EC2 instance, and then I get a failure, and who do I call? Do I call Amazon? What's going on? And then just suddenly I can start doing it an hour later. So it might have been underreported because the nature of what was not working, it would have been a little less visible. Fewer activities would have revealed it, I suppose.
But it quite well underlines importance of having visibility such as this one for your services that are already deployed or that you intend to deploy. Having overall structured monitoring strategy on how are you going to do your cloud presence is important, and monitoring it properly is quite important part of it. So this is a clear example on overall importance of having, you know, something like this.
No, that's actually a great point, because I mean, if you think about how, and you know, I personally really enjoy AWS services. I mean, it's a beautiful setup, and you can do a lot of stuff with it. But as a customer, what I need to know is, when I'm trying to operate on this environment, why is something not working? So maybe I'm not getting customer complaints, but I'm getting complaints from dev team that, hey, we're running into some issues spinning up a new instance. You know, how do I understand and troubleshoot that? Or maybe EC2 is working, but S3 service is not working, or Route 53 is not working, whatever the various thing is. How do I know if it's a bigger problem, if all of these things are failing? Is it me? Internet? So I think the benefit of understanding not only understanding the internal architecture of the asset that you're using, but being able to get that not just visibility, but that actionable operation type visibility. So in other words, I'm looking at, you know, this view here. I can see that, oh, hey, dev team, there's a reason EC2 is not working. I do see other Amazon services are working. There's something ongoing with EC2. I'll reach out to our support team on Amazon side. That would be the course of action, right? So it gave me something very actionable. I can communicate back to my stakeholders. I can, you know, help my ops team, know what to do next, and ultimately know how to mitigate and get this resolved.
Unfortunately, it looks like that event that happened on 10th of December wasn't the last event that happened to AWS. It looks that we got reports and alerts indicating that there was event that happened on 15th as well. So, Chris, could you take us a little bit through this event?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, this one appears, not to be related, at least based on what we can see, to the events of the 7th and the 10th. It's in a different part of the world. This was in the US West. And then we also saw a corresponding failure that they also announced in US West too. So this is Northern California and Oregon Amazon locations. So we see this event again here. It begins right here at 15:05 UTC is when we start to see. Well, actually, a little bit past that. Here we go. 15:15 UTC is when we start seeing the first indications of red, right? So we're getting some of these failures with talking with the EC2, again, the EC2 service, one of those four, those foundational fundamental services that power the solution. Of course, this is in the US West 1 region. And if we look over at the table here, you know, again, it's a smaller number of sources failing, and this is a timeout here, and another timeout here. So if we kind of walk through this again, this is a.
It's a combination of receive events or technically timeouts, which indicates that connection could not be established in time, or it's not that it could not be established, the complete operation, complete phase of the test could not be completed, and connect indicate that we were not able to establish a three-way handshake or like a successful TCP connection, right? And based on some information that Amazon published on their status page, it's indicative that this was event related to traffic engineering, as part of which they were moving a piece of traffic from one part towards the other part, as part of which they unfortunately shifted much bigger portion of their traffic towards the part which could not handle it, as part of which we can quite clearly see quite high amount of packet loss.
Right. So let's go ahead and take a look at that view. And just one point to note. So it's interesting that and that's something we always worry about every time you touch a device, right? But the event of the 7th and likely the spillover into the 10th was related to, I think, how did they phrase it? An automated scaling activity. So they're trying to scale out the network, and it's an automated process, and then it resulted in some unexpected behaviors. That was on the 10th. That's, you know, per Amazon, right? Whereas this one was, again, they note it's another change. It's a traffic engineering. Part of me wonders if this was maybe a manual versus an automated type of a process, but it's just speculation. But again, with this one, what one difference we do see with this one versus the event on the 7th and the 10th is that we clearly see evidence of impact to data plane, impact to that IP data path between us, our various sources and the EC2 destination in Northern California. So if you look at this example right here, you know, we're at an average of 58.5% packet loss. Well, let's jump over to the height of it here with an average of 79, and some of them worse, right? This, you know.
Yeah, and if you look at this, if you look at this packet loss figures, they all indicate, you know, quite bad service for the end user, right? These flows are going to be severely affected in form of really low throughput or inability to connect, as we saw in our HTTP server in the first place. You know, there's nothing positive that can, you know, result from the event that resulted in such a big packet loss. But also this event outlines, you know, underlying complexity of traffic engineering changes. So regardless of whether you do them in automatic or manual fashion, it's always a risky process that involves a lot of, you know, a lot of different decisions that needs to be made. And, you know, mistakes, regardless whether automated or not, do happen, right? So this is one additional example. We are having visibility into what's happening, where it's happening, what's the scale of event, you know, is really important. So, you know, while these are all unfortunate events for AWS and AWS customers, you know, I'm actually quite glad that the platform managed to capture all three of them and to pinpoint where this issue potentially happened.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I mean, all of our outages, whether it's one I caused by some error or you know, some an internet provider causes, or it's something on a service provider, a cloud service provider, often are due to a change, right? I mean, you know, very rarely do you have a fault that's introduced because just the hardware itself fails. I mean, we have so much resiliency and redundancy even within hardware platforms. That tends to be the more rare. And then, you know, of course, you have the ability of the software to failure like a bug or something that's, but again, those tend to be pretty rare. So the vast majority of the failures we encounter in technology tend to be, you know, human cost ultimately, right? So we're making some change. We have to make those changes. We're not going to stop making these changes, but you know, when we do make these changes, how, you know, and when people, and it's not just us, I'm making changes on my side. My internet provider is making changes, and, you know, Amazon's making changes. How do we, and then something stops working, you know, how do we know, you know, who to engage to try to remediate, right?
Exactly. So, and you know, these things happen regardless to who you are, right? So for example, just not so long ago, we saw automated change taking Facebook and Facebook services down for 6 hours, right? And it was automated change. This may be manual or automatic, but fundamentally doesn't matter. You need to have instrumentation which is going to tell you where the issue is potentially happening, what is happening, and you know, you should potentially quite quickly, based on the alerts or, you know, insights that you are getting from the data, react to those events. That's like, remediation is really key, right? But in order to get to the remediation, you need to have indication and, you know, you need to have a proof on what's going on in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and again, I think the way this one was interesting just because we get a different set of data, right? Whereas with those other issues, we saw that control plane was good, BGP was good, we had connectivity all the way to Amazon, and IP path looked perfectly clean, no loss, latency, jitter. Whereas in this one, we clearly see this issue is caused by packet loss, right? This is an impact to data path between us and Amazon. And in fact, it's happening, if we just jump up here, within Amazon's environment. So we're already in Amazon's network. You see here that we've already crossed, into their environment. And then somewhere from here onward, we can no longer get any farther, right? We have 100% forwarding loss. And this is the case for, you know, all of these failures, right? They were, once you got into Amazon's environment, it's now 100% loss. So it was a different type of manifestation, ultimately resulting in same inability to manipulate EC2 service. So what are our takeaways from all this? Like what do we do as customers? How do we better engage with our customers and partners and also our vendors, right? So I think we all understand that cloud services, they're unavoidable, and not that they should be avoided, right? I mean, I personally love the use of cloud services. We wouldn't be where we are today in the internet and all the services and availability of all these tools and platforms were it not for cloud services. So how do I operate knowing this, right? Well, you know, I know I'm going to continue to use these. In fact, I'm going to continue to expand use of these services, but I need to understand the complexity of these services. I need to understand, for example, that, you know, quite honestly, we've taken what used to be a, you know, equivalent of like a, you know, stand-up server or, you know, a rack server, and we've taken all of the little pieces out of it and made them their own service that now has to communicate. And there's no bus now, you know, across a circuit board to communicate. We're doing this over the network. So compute, storage, database services, ability to get to the internet, and, you know, the network address translation we talked about. These are all different things that get stitched together. So I need to be able to understand the complexity of those, you know, those things I'm using within a solution I'm in turn offering to my customers. But it's a little more than that. So, you know, you can understand the complexity by, you know, Amazon puts a lot of information out there about their architecture, the, you know, the reInvent, where they talk about their, you know, their setups. You can learn all this, but I need operational understanding and operational visibility of that complexity. So in other words, I recognize that, let's say I've got, you know, four or five different services that form my solution within Amazon. Each of these services, maybe they've got their own API. Well, I need to be able to monitor. I need to be able to know what exactly is failing. Again, is it me? Is it on our side? Is it my service provider? Is it something between my service provider and Amazon on the internet? That's again maybe another third party. Is it something on the Amazon side? And then more so, what specifically is not working, right? In that example that we saw on the 10th, we know that the API gateway was still working, but yet the EC2 service wasn't working. And so in that scenario, I would be able to inform my dev team, hey, this is why you can't access EC2. There's something, or you can't spin up new instances rather.
So on the example of the event that happened on 15th, you know, you would be able to actually quite easily see the effects of the traffic engineering change that you just performed, looking at the patterns of the data. Yes.
Yeah, and we want this visibility for a few reasons, right? I mean, we ultimately need to know who to call to help us resolve something if it's outside my control. But more than that, right? I do my own design, my own planning, knowing how these services are set up, knowing can I, you know, build some resiliency by maybe I use another region for something, and I can do some manual effort to go, oh, hey, they're having some problem with US West 1 between that data center and internet. Well, maybe I can do something to you know, enable my customers to still, you know, use this service with another region. There's different things I can do. So it can help me with operational things, help me with forecasts, you know, planning, all of this type of stuff. I mean, that's what, you know, I mean by that operational visibility of this complexity. It's something that you need that can be actionable. I can actually take the data I learned with this to not just fix it right now, but to make it better for me, you know, kind of ongoing, right? So I think that about wraps up. It was definitely an interesting week in the cloud world, in the internet world. I think, well, any week has that chance. So that's our show. Don't forget to subscribe. And here's the good news. If you do subscribe, we'll send you a free t-shirt. I don't know if it's like this one, but it's a pretty nice shirt either way. Just drop us a note to internetreport@thousandeyes.com with your address and t-shirt size, and we'll get that over to you.